all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We also want to thank our latest national sponsor, Veteran Lending Council. It is a community dedicated to educating lenders, realtors, and veterans on the VA Home Loan Benefit Program. You can check them out on Facebook and other social media outlets. We have a couple of really interesting interviews for you today with a couple of veterans. One is Chris Vadu, who's the CEO of Sheets Laundry Club. I think you'll find not only the business that he started and why he started it, but his burn pit exposure somewhat interesting. And then I'll fill in a little after that about the recently passed PACT Act to provide some help to those exposed to toxic fumes from burn pits and some other good things in there for Agent Orange veterans. And then we're going to talk about VA health, VA life insurance. You may or may not know, VA insures a whole bunch of different types of folks with life insurance, and Brett Finley is going to talk to us about that as a veteran and as an insurance agent. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today a U.S. Army veteran who's got a cool business, Chris Vadu. We're going to talk about his military career, his helicopter flying, and then we're going to talk about Sheets Laundry Club. Chris, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate you having me and the opportunity to speak with you.
Well, this is we're going to start with the military stuff, if you don't mind, and how a nice kid like you ended up in the U.S. Army for 20 years and flying helicopters. Sure. Give us the thumbnail.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in a small town in Northern California. At 18, my brother went to college when he turned 18, and I don't think at 18 I was ready for college, but I was definitely ready to get out of that small town. So I joined as a military police officer in 1996. I did that for about 6 years, made it to E6. Wasn't really my cup of tea. I have the utmost respect for law enforcement. I didn't enjoy the constant night shift. It wasn't my cup of tea to be up all night driving around. So through that process, I got kind of the education I needed and put in a flight packet for Warrant Officer Candidate School, was fortunate enough to get picked up, and in 2001 headed down to Fort Rucker, Alabama, and transitioned into aviation and spent the remaining 14 years of my career flying Blackhawks.
Well, you've got to talk about Fort Rucker because here on Veterans Radio, we love helicopter pilots. As I mentioned earlier to you, my partner Dale Throneberry was a chief warrant officer and flew helicopters in Vietnam. So I'm sure you enjoyed your time at Mother Rucker. Everybody does, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mother Rucker's fun. I was actually just there a few weeks ago, believe it or not. As I was an MP, how I got the bug, I had an opportunity to just do a kind of a fun flight, if you would, We were doing some medevac practice. I think it was just an E2 or an E3. And at the end of that, they gave everybody a little flight around the parade field there at Fort Carson. And it just really changed my perspective on what I wanted to do with my life and my career. I just thought it was so cool to sit in the back seat and see those guys fly that helicopter. So no different than business today. I figured out, you know, that was a changing point for me. So I think I went down to the education center and tried to figure out what those guys had to do to become pilots, and spent the next 3 or 4 years in the Army kind of chasing those dreams to prepare myself for the AFAST and kind of meet the other qualifications. And it was kind of off to the races after that. Fort Rucker for me was a blast. I'm not going to lie. I had fun. It was, I was there for, I think, about 18 months the first time for flight school, and long, exhausting days Monday through Friday, but we definitely made a lot of trips to Florida and enjoyed the weekends. So it was definitely an interesting duty station.
Well, I think I saw that you ended up with over 2,000 hours of flying time, that you became a chief instructor pilot, that you had tours really all over the world, including into some of the hot spots. Talk to us about some of your overseas assignments.
Yeah, so as a helicopter pilot, I was in Iraq, and I also lived in Germany for, I think, about 2.5 years. Getting to fly Europe in itself was an amazing opportunity, because you travel all over Europe, from, you know, down to Italy on up to Copenhagen and all over. So the experience there was unreplaceable. I mean, it was a paid vacation in Europe for 2.5 years. Probably one of the most enjoyable 2.5 years of my life. Iraq, not quite as enjoyable. It was definitely an experience and an opportunity. As a pilot, it definitely, you know, it tests your skills. You don't fly in a combat zone anywhere near like you fly in the civilian world. Kind of the FAA rules, in a sense, are kind of out the window. You're flying more for survival mode, which makes the flying fun. So it really grows you as a pilot, and it makes you not second guess your decisions. You have to be quick to react to whatever that decision is, and stick with it and make it work. So it really, it grows you as a pilot. It grows you as a human. And it was a phenomenal experience, but I definitely wouldn't want to make a 20-year career out of Iraq either.
You know, when we've talked to helicopter pilots, and as I say, we talked to a lot of them, because of the way in which you fly, you get a whole different perspective on the ground, on the theater, on what's going on, than you do if you're in a jet zipping by, right? And that different perspective had to really come into play when you were in Iraq, I suspect.
Yeah, I mean, I've never flown a jet, but yes, they're in and out, coming typically from outside a combat zone, and in many cases into the combat zone, and then back out of it when they're done. I think as a helicopter pilot, you're definitely more in tune with the guys on the ground. You're often their first line of either defense or rescue, and you've got to understand that in many situations, especially air assaults, that you're the only opportunity for those guys sometimes to get out of a hostile environment. And if you can't get in there and get them, they've got to fight their way out of it. And that's not always an option for those guys on the ground. So you really do understand that, you know, me getting in there and getting these guys out, you know, is their lives dependent on it. Their wives and kids' lives are dependent on their parents. So there's a lot of people that are affected by you getting in there and helping these guys in a time of need. So it's definitely a job that, you know, I never took lightly, and I understood that how dependent the ground troops can be on the helicopter pilots in a very, you know, hostile environment.
And we're talking to Chris Fadu, who's a U.S. Army retired warrant officer who spent 16 years or 14 years, something like that, flying Black Hawk helicopters. Chris, remind our listeners sort of what the role of the Sikorsky Black Hawk is in theater.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a few main roles. Medevac being one of them. It's the main medevac source for the combat zone. I did not do medevac in Iraq. I was an air assault pilot. So that's the other main role is taking, you know, soldiers into a combat zone and dropping them off for whatever, you know, whatever mission they have within that region. And typically our job is to return and pick them up as well. And that's, again, that's just an air assault. You're taking them in and bringing them out so they can execute a mission. So those are the two main jobs of a Black Hawk UH-60 when you're deployed.
And I want to transition a little bit to some of, let me reference it this way. So while we're talking about his skills as a pilot, because of your length of service, you had a number of responsibilities relative to budgeting and personnel and what I'll call the business end of training and instructing as well with Blackhawks, if I understand it.
Yeah. I mean, when even in the combat role, you know, I wasn't an instructor pilot in Iraq. But I was a safety officer and an instructor pilot and also a standardization pilot. All of those come with different roles. You know, I started out as a safety officer was my first track. So, you know, it was just collecting analytical data to keep and doing the data that was required for the command to make sure that we were operating within the SOP safely and we weren't conducting missions that were not within our SOP that weren't safe for the company. So at the end of the day, it's making sure the guys are doing things the correct way. As I transitioned to an instructor pilot later, I spent most of my days, you know, really just teaching the guys, whether it was out of flight school or the senior guys, giving them their annual evaluations, just making sure that they were fit to fly, safe to fly, and you know, just doing the basic evaluations. As a standardization pilot standing up a combat aviation brigade at Fort Carson, we spent a lot more of our time writing those SOPs, working with commanders, figuring out what assets we had, what resources we had, how many helicopters we had, you know, how many pilots we had. It was all part of standing up a brand new aviation brigade.
Now I'm gonna tie this in later too, because I'm gonna ask this guy, like, hey, how did this Army grunt think he could run a business? But I want our listeners to hear what he's done while in the Army, and this is gonna tie back into running a successful business. But before, sure, I get to Sheet Laundry Club, Chris, I know your wife is also a Army veteran, and we should give some props to the women who serve. Tell us a little, absolutely, bit about Lorian.
Yeah, so Lori and I, we met in the Army. We met probably at about 10 years before we actually got married. She was serving as a military police canine handler. I had met her while I was a military police officer. I actually left for Fort Rucker. We were both stationed at Fort Sill at the time. I left for Fort Rucker, Alabama for flight school. She stayed at Fort Sill. We kind of went along our separate ways for a better part of 10 years. And I was stationed up in Alaska, and I, you know, social media, I happened to see that she was on there, and we kind of connected, and we were really good friends prior. There was never any dating or relationship. But I happened to be going to a conference down south while I was in Alabama, and she was going to be in that area. We kind of connected, hung out, revisited, and she got out, got her degree, became a veterinarian technician. And just one thing led to another, and we just continued to stay in touch. And the next thing I know, we were making long distance trip between, you know, Flagstaff, Arizona, and Alaska. And you know, several years later, we got married and had kids, and life has been good.
And that's great. And as I say, we should always give our props to our women veterans who don't get enough recognition for what they do for the country.
Absolutely, I agree.
One of the things that you experienced over in Iraq, though, again, ties in a little bit to the business you're in today, and that is seeing the burn pits and the trash in the cities and just sort of the everything gets thrown in the fire, resulting in some sort of, you know, black smoky haze. Tell us about that experience while you were going through it and how it sort of shaped you both physically and mentally.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's 4 million plus veterans today. And unfortunately, this doesn't include Vietnam. I believe it's just the Iraq and Afghanistan suffer lasting effects from the burn pits overseas. If you don't know what the burn pits are, which I think everybody listening here does, it's just a, you know, football field size burn pits where, you know, the U.S. is burning all the trash overseas rather than hauling it out of there. And in some of the larger cities, you would see the cities burning it as well. But a majority of that was, you know, the U.S. military burning it. As a pilot, you know, if you kind of picture, you know, black smoke goes up and then, you know, about 1,000 feet or so, the wind starts to carry it left or right. You know, that's where we spent a majority of our day was flying through where that smoke was at. You know, we actually used burn pits as checkpoints at night because you could see them from, you know, 10 miles away. So it gave you a good reference because they burn 24/7. We joked while we were in Iraq that we were all going to get lung cancer from the burn pits, and it was kind of the running joke. Reality is we got back. For me, I got back, and, you know, you don't run a lot when you're in Iraq, so you got back, and I struggled to run as well as I had prior to deploying. At first, I just thought it was being out of shape for a year, but I never did get the two-mile run time down to where it was prior. You know, I was always great at PT tests, and now I was pushing just to make my minimum run time. So had a lot of trouble breathing while I was running, and later, you know, I started going to the doctor trying to figure out why I was, you know, coughing and having breathing issues. And over time we did, you know, we've really learned to understand that it was a lot of the dioxins that was probably in all the plastic water bottles that we were drinking out of that were being burnt on a daily basis that were in that smoke. And inhaling that really messed up my lungs permanently. So that was, to your point, kind of what gave me the drive to create a plastic-free business model.
Well, I'll get to that momentarily. But you just triggered something that I think probably our veteran radio listeners are thinking about, in that it makes sense to them that pilots are flying through this stuff even as it tries to disperse in the air. But did the military, did the Army discharge you under any sort of medical discharge, or did VA recognize what you were experiencing, like, hey, man, my lungs don't work the same way, I can't get back to my run times? How did that play out for you?
Yeah, so I'm actually one of the fortunate. Yes, the VA did recognize because they were all documented prior to my retirement. I wasn't medically retired, but they did recognize the lung damage that I have occurred, and I do have a disability for that. So obviously compensated for it, which, you know, doesn't fix the issue at hand. But yes, I was compensated for it. Unfortunately, you know, it's been very much a challenge for, you know, say the kid that was in for 4 years that got out, and 2 years later started experiencing issues. Those are the kids that are struggling, and we've actually worked with, you know, I talked to Senator Tillis this year here in North Carolina. We've worked with John Stewart from Apple TV, Burn Pits 360, you know, Grunt Style Foundation and Grunt Style. We've worked with them, this year to help get a bill passed, which did just recently get passed through the Senate, the PAC Act. And that's to help, these veterans that are suffering, you know, permanent lung damage, get the benefits and the medical care that they're entitled to that the government, for years has turned a blind eye on. So that's been a big, huge step for us in 2022, getting that passed. So these veterans that have much more severe issues than I do are getting the medical treatment they deserve.
Yeah. We've been trying to shine a light on this in Veterans Radio for some time now. And it seems like there's the momentum here in 2022 to get this done and not let these veterans languish, as so many have, on toxic exposure kind of things, whether it be Camp Lejeune or going back to Agent Orange or mm-hmm. any of the toxic base issues. So really do appreciate your continued working on this area. And again, when Absolutely. I was when I was kind of looking into Chris Vidu and going, yeah, do I talk to Sheets Laundry Club CEO? That part of the story from a Veterans Radio standpoint and our listeners is really interesting, and we appreciate all that you're doing. It also kind of springboarded you into what to do when you retired, which is Sheets Laundry Club. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Sheets Laundry Club, you know, and people, yeah, I mean, I say it was a bonehead idea in the beginning. It wasn't necessarily a bonehead idea. But my wife and I, you know, we've been, for several years before this, we've really tried to rid single-use plastics out of our life, our home. Whether it's, you know, we go out in the lake, we take canned water. And now I've got friends that take canned water because they know my story. So we're trying to make a change, whether it's, you know, through some of the, positions that I've been able to do through this business, working with some celebrities, or it's changing it locally. But Sheets Laundry Club was an idea that we had, to figure out how to, you know, kind of turn the tide on plastic pollution, no pun intended. Laundry space, you know, accounts for almost a billion laundry jugs a year in the U.S. alone. And I think less than 91% of them are actually recycled. So the rest wind up in landfill or oceans, or they're sent to third world countries as we pay other countries to take our plastic trash and they burn it. So we're still creating the same problems. We're just not doing it at home. So the goal was to figure out how to create a product line, and kind of reinvent the wheel so we can, you know, have the same efficacy in a product that cleans, but not in the same package. So ultimately that's what Sheets Laundry Club is we're a plastic free laundry company. We've learned how to take the liquid out of laundry detergent by dehydrating it, and putting them in a postcard size sheet format that goes in a box, that works just as well as liquid detergents. But it doesn't come with the 500-year lasting effects of the bottle that it came in.
Now you guys started this in, I think it was 2019, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've officially launched in December of 2019. Several years before that, it took several years of planning to kind of, work the kinks out of it, figure out how to make a product that worked, find a manufacturing company that could do the product and do it to scale that could meet the demands we needed. But yeah, December 19 was when we were just working out of my business partner's garage, just to see if we could make a successful go of it.
So I think you got out of service. I didn't ask you this earlier, but I think you got out of service in about 2016.
Yeah, I did. I actually, February of 2016 was my retirement date, yeah.
So this goes back to the question, which is always asked, how the hell did this Army vet think he could launch a business like this? What experiences did he have? And we talked a little bit about all this management experience and budgeting and personnel and safety and standard procedures that you were getting a business education, you just didn't know it, in the Army.
Yeah.
But again, talk a little. I'm kind of real curious about this period between 2016 and 2019, because it, you know, today you're an overnight success, but let's face it, there was a lot of hard times, a lot of financial times, a lot of technical times, manufacturing problems. Talk to us about that period.
Yeah. So I was fortunate enough. My wife is an artist. So when we retired, we moved out to North Carolina. I actually have a buddy that owned a NASCAR team, so. We kind of came out here, and I helped with his team for a little bit on the marketing side. Kind of really realized it wasn't for me. But my wife's an artist, so we opened a little brick and mortar business here in Mooresville, North Carolina, called Painting with a Twist. It was a paint and sip studio. We did that for about 4 years. That's really where I got a lot of the business experience, maybe on the civilian side, whether it's understanding QuickBooks, how to, you know, build out your chart of accounts, work with a CPA, whether it was merchant accounts.
You learned about cash flow, didn't you?
I learned about cash flow, and I learned how hard it was in the brick and mortar space, because we worked for 4 years, 7 days a week, and, you know, my son was basically raised by single parents because one of us was always working. And through those 4 years, you know, you're really just, we struggled just to keep the power bill paid and the payroll paid for employees. We weren't making money. So my wife was ready for me to go get a job flying somewhere. And that last year, of the paint studio was kind of when I came up, with the idea for Sheets Laundry Club. And nobody, and I'll tell you, nobody thought it was a good idea. Everybody thought I was crazy. And I think a lot of the military, experience background really helped me persevere through that, because when enough people tell you no, eventually, you'll understand that you got to quit. It's a bad idea. And maybe I'm hard-headed, maybe I'm ignorant, but I didn't take no for an answer. So we spent, you know, a better part of 18 months or so, building a product, a plan, and then kind of taking it to a couple investors that, you know, believed in, what we were doing and the product that we had. And they saw the success, that they saw success in what we were doing. And that's kind of when it came to fruition. And I think it really took me a solid year before I actually had people that kind of realized, hey, maybe this might work out for this guy, because everybody else thought it was the dumbest idea since sliced bread.
Yeah, and you do have to tackle a problem and not sort of say, well, geez, my buddy, my brother-in-law thinks it's dumb, I should stop. But again, that's some of that army training, right? You got to be hard-headed enough to say, I'm still going to make the objective, even if there's something in my way. And you mentioned manufacturing. Find this one thing to have the idea. You had the idea, but somehow you have to manufacture this. How'd you go about finding somebody who could grab your vision and turn it into a product?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hardest part. First and foremost, it's nobody's ever. I tell every entrepreneur, nobody's going to see your vision. Nobody's going to understand your vision. You know, in a meeting today with our COO, we still talk vision. And where we want to go with this company and what we got to do, because again, your vision's only as good as the information you share with others. But it was definitely a challenge to find it. There's a few manufacturing facilities, around the world that have the technology to make this type of product. We've worked with every one of them. And we finally found one, that had the best pricing, but also the best product. You know, we went back and forth for 6 months and spent, you know, north of $20,000 just getting samples, you know, 50 laundry detergent sheets here, 50 there, just to do the testing and send it to laboratories in Ohio that do laundry testing. So, you know, again, and that's one of 43 products. You have to do that, with every product within your line. You know, we sell scent boosters. And there's one manufacturing company that fills those in the United States because they own the patent on it. But the difference is their machinery is set up to fill plastic tubes. It's not set up to fill bags or cardboard tubes. So we had to develop a cardboard tube that would fit within their machining, specifications. So you kind of have to build your product line to work in a capacity where things are made to work with plastic. And kind of re-replicate the design of that product, in a different form. And for us, it's cardboard tubes, or the deodorant, it's cardboard tubes. So that's always been a challenge. It's the hardest part about being in this space is there's no manufacturing facilities that are really set up to just, do what they do on a daily basis without the use of plastic. So we get creative and make, the packaging fit what their machinery is capable of working with.
And we're talking to Chris Vadu, who's the founder, CEO of Sheets Laundry Club, which you can find at sheetslaundryclub.com and look at their products. We're going to talk about them in a minute. But I want to go back to that point where you had a brick-and-mortar facility and all the things that went along with that. Tell us how that experience about brick-and-mortar fit into the type of business you wanted to go forward with Sheets Laundry Club.
I don't know that it fit in. I think it gave me an understanding of how to run a business, and we didn't make enough money, so I couldn't outsource anything. Every aspect of it, whether it was doing your taxes, you know, hiring the people, doing the payroll, We did everything in-house because we couldn't afford to outsource it. So once I transitioned into this business, we did the same thing. We were able to internally do everything ourselves. And I gained that experience through that brick and mortar, which allowed us to really manage our cash flow in the beginning so that we could, you know, not pay CPAs and accountants and payroll services to do everything. Cause cash is king inside a business. And if you can't manage your cash flow, you can't grow, you can't move forward, you can't order product, you can't make payroll. So I think that was the biggest benefit of owning a business. And I think it also gave me a lot of experience to, managing people. You know, I'm always a lead by example person. And we did that at Painting with a Twist, but it's different. It's, you can't lead a, in the civilian world, a person the way you would lean on an E2 to get a job done. You know, when 5 o'clock hits, they're leaving whether it's done or not, and you're picking up the mess. That was a definite challenge for me coming from the Army where, you know, we weren't leaving until the mission was complete. The real world, the mission's complete when the 8-hour shift is over. So it really, and that still translates today with Sheets Laundry Club, you know, so, people will stay, but you're paying overtime.
So it's Sheets though. Can I walk into my grocery store and buy these?
You can't. Well, it depends on where you live. We are in all the Harris Teeter locations, which is 262 big box stores, in 7 states here on the East Coast. We'll be in all the Meijer locations, this August. And looking like we'll probably be up in Wegmans as well later this year.
So let's talk about the products, because it started with this idea that, look at all this laundry detergent. We all got big bottles, you know, on the shelf somewhere that we use and then throw out, because what else are you going to do with it?
Sure.
And it started with just laundry detergent sheets, but you've got you know, a variety of different things that kind of fit this vision of let's get the plastic out of things that we use every day, every week, really out of the, these are household products. So tell us about some of the products and some of the expansion that's going on.
Yeah. So, I mean, the laundry sheet was first and foremost, like you said, and the concept behind that really came from a short memory I had, and I was stationed in Korea in 1999 to 2000. In Asia, they had a kind of a laundry detergent sheet. It was a dryer sheet where they put the laundry detergent over it, so you threw it in the wash, and it just, the dryer sheet transitioned over to the dryer. It didn't work at all, in my opinion, but kind of gave me the idea, because, you know, we started out as an e-commerce business, and you can't ship liquid and be competitive in the laundry space because of the weight. So I knew if we wanted to get into the laundry space on e-commerce, we had to figure out how to be able to ship effectively and stay competitive with other products in the space. So that's really where the vision for the laundry sheet came from. Obviously, it's 180 degrees different than what I used in 1999. Technology's grown a lot since then, but it gave me the idea to research that and figure out where that laundry sheet had evolved to over the course of 20 years. As of today, you know, we've expanded the product line from, you know, like I said, scent boosters. We've got plant-based dryer sheets where we no longer, if you didn't know, a dryer sheet, all of that little fabric that it's on is actually woven plastic. So we now use a cellulose plant-based material that we put everything on. So it's completely compostable and biodegradable. We've entered into the kitchen space as well. We've replaced the Dawn dish soap with solid dish soaps, to dishwasher tablets, to soap trays, to coconut scrubs instead of the cleaning pads that have microplastics in it. We've got into the, you know, the personal care, whether it's body soaps or shampoo bars, deodorants, things like that. So we're slowly just trying to build a brand that can transition some of the cleaning and self-care products that we're using on a daily basis. We're transitioning those out of the home with products that meet the same efficacy, that are price competitive with everything on the market, that make an impact. You know, the goal and part of my vision statement with people is we need to create products that work, that don't require a lifestyle change, and they don't break the bank. So that's always the first and foremost. You know, going green or going clean, as I call it, is very expensive in many instances, and it's very life-changing for some people to do. And everything we've developed doesn't require you necessarily to read an instruction manual on how to use it or how to do it. So you're getting the same type of product. You're just making an impact without actually having to learn how to do it.
Yeah, and I think most of us would choose a more friendly product and get some of the plastics out if it was cost effective. You didn't feel like you were, you know, being charged up 30% because of it. And certainly at a time when we have, unfortunately, raging inflation, these are price point decisions people have to make. Is your yeah. business primarily e-commerce at this point, Chris, or is it transitioning from e-commerce over to the brick and mortar provision where you can get it into the big boxes?
Yeah, I mean we're primarily e-commerce. So we've started out e-commerce. You know, we started out, you know, shipping 5 orders a day to 10 orders a day to several thousand orders a day. So, you know, we're still shipping out, you know, in north of 50,000 orders a month right now, through our facilities here. But we are definitely focused on retail. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to the vision of making a change, and turning that tide on plastic pollution. So, retail locations give us that, ability to do the same thing. So, the 2022 focus was, you know, expanding the brand into retail. And we're doing that nicely. We think we should be in about 750, major big box retailers by the end of the year. And, you know, hope to be closer to 3,000 by the end of 2023 with a continued focus to grow the e-com brand.
Yeah, I think it's just a great option for folks, sure. the e-commerce brand. And I'd probably be remiss if I didn't mention, or ask you to talk about your Shark Tank experience for Sheetz Laundry Club.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we did. It was never in the plans when we started Sheetz Laundry Club. And it's kind of ironic because I've watched Shark Tank since its conception, probably, I think, 13 seasons ago. I think I've always been an entrepreneur at heart, just, you know, didn't really make the transition till retirement. But I've always loved it, and I've always wondered how people come up with these quirky ideas to get on a TV show. So last July, actually, we went out and filmed an episode. I think we were the first company of season 13 to actually film and went on that show. And it was a phenomenal experience. It was something I think I'm honored to say I did once, but I don't think I would like to do twice. I think once was enough of that experience. But you learn a lot. You learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about your business. You learn a lot. I mean, it took a lot of intestinal fortitude for me to get up there, in front of 5, you know, celebrities that are, super wealthy. I think a lot of people don't realize the 30 or 40 cameras and 100 people that are behind the scenes that are also watching you, while you do that. It's truly kind of as you see on TV. I didn't have an opportunity to sit down with a shark or meet a shark. The first time I saw their faces was when those double doors opened, just like it's you see on TV. And you're out there for obviously a much longer duration. They edit it down to hopefully some of the better parts that make your brand look successful and make you look successful. But the overall experience was huge for us. It gave us a huge platform to grow the business. You know, we've had, you know, Fox News, New York Times, Fortune Magazine, just a lot of opportunity to continue to tell our story and grow our brand post Shark Tank. So I'm beyond thankful for the opportunity to get a chance to do that, because it was definitely not something I had ever envisioned doing in my life.
Chris, thanks for spending some extra time with Veterans Radio today and giving us some insight.
You bet. I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you. And, you know, just as veterans say, never give up and continue to fight the good fight. And I appreciate your guys' support, and have a wonderful afternoon.
Part of Chris's story is really about his exposure to burn pits, toxic fumes, and some realization that burning plastics is a crazy thing. Can we find a way around dumping so much plastic jugs from laundry detergent into either burn pits or just landfill? So we'll come back after a few words from sponsors to talk about the recently passed PACT Act.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. Veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
As I said, I wanted to tie the recently passed PACT Act, which stands for Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxic Act of 2022, or Honoring Our PACT Act, as the Senate bill was known. We're going to have a program on this in Veterans Radio later in the month, but I want to point out to people that this expands and extends eligibility for VA health care for veterans with toxic exposures, and it provides some assistance to Vietnam veterans, Gulf War veterans, and certainly post-9/11 era veterans. There are now 20 new presumptive conditions for burn pit and other toxic exposures, and it adds more presumptive exposure locations for Agent Orange and radiation. And it requires VA to provide a toxic exposure screening to every veteran enrolled in VA healthcare. It's pretty comprehensive. As I say, we'll have another program on it, but it kind of relates to a little bit of what and how Sheets Laundry Club got started, so we wanted to bring that up. Now we're going to do a short segment on some VA insurance that I think you might find of interest. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Brett Fenley. Brett is a Michigan Army National Guard veteran, but I've got him on for his civilian expertise in the insurance area. Brett, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Jim. Happy to be here.
Well, let's start with this. How did a nice guy who's, behaving himself and not getting in too much trouble end up spending 6 years in the Michigan Army National Guard?
That's kind of part of it. Part of it is a little goofing around, not going to college and not, doing the right things to start. And then I thought, I gotta figure my life out. And my buddy had joined the National Guard, and I thought, that sounds like the right path for me as well. So I think I'll try it out and see how it works out.
Well, and it did work out. As I said, you spent 6 years in the Guard, rose to the rank of sergeant, and Uncle Sam was kind enough to send you over to a overseas deployment in 2010. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I did convoy security with the 119th out of Battle Creek in Augusta, I guess. We did convoy security, went from Virginia into Camp Adder over in Iraq. So spend a couple days there, and then I come back following a couple days later. They'd send us back, and we'd pick up new trucks and bring them back.
So this was bouncing between Kuwait and Iraq, I take it?
Yes, yep.
And how long did you spend over there?
We were there, it was a year. I was on deployment for a year, then we were in Iraq for, the 9 months or whatever it is after MOB. 10 months.
Yeah, and everybody says, "Oh, that was fun. I don't ever want to do that again."
I enjoyed it. I actually volunteered to go again to Afghanistan, but they cut the mission short, so no worries. But I actually really enjoyed deployment. So,
and after that point in time, you came back and picked up your bachelor's in business administration from Eastern Michigan University. And you also worked in private security for a while.
I did. Yeah, I was a private security officer for the Ann Arbor EPA over in the north side of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I was their lead officer, they called. It's kind of like the head of security-ish. You know, you run the day-to-day operations, monitor the security guards. And then in 2017, I left there, went back, and I ended up graduating from Eastern in 2019 with my bachelor's in business administration.
And you transitioned into insurance with Farm Bureau Insurance. Tell us a little bit about that transition.
I was looking for I wanted to go into sales, and I like helping people. So I kind of just decided, you know, this would be a good avenue for me to get to that helping people. It's something I can, it's Farm Bureau is a company where we sit down and talk to people rather than, some of your larger corporations that do insurance. We like to have that personal interaction with each client. So I kind of like that, and I can teach people about insurance. Is, you know, I get opportunities like this to sit down and talk to lots of people on the radio and wherever else this will be posted at. And I can inform people of their best options. And you know, help them through the smaller, finer details of insurance that not a lot of people recognize or get into all that often.
Well, many of us know we should have life insurance and don't do anything. We are not properly insured, and we don't find out till it's too late. And I'm going to give you a chance to talk about that a little bit. But what caught my eye a month or so ago is that VA, the Department of Veterans Affairs, is going to have a new life insurance policy for veterans, and it's called VA Life, and it's going to come about, it's not open for enrollment yet, as I understand it. It comes about January 1st of 2023, but it triggered for me this whole idea that we as veterans had some insurance when we were in service. Some of it we paid for and let lapse. Some of it covered us if certain things happened. But here was a new opportunity to maybe get some hopefully appropriate low-cost insurance. But let's back up again. What do you tell folks, Brett, when they come in and sit down with you at the Fenley Insurance Group in Ann Arbor and say, I don't know if I don't really know if I need life insurance? That's probably how the conversation starts.
Most of the time, yes. So the first thing we talk about is, you know, do you have children? Do you have someone that relies on you? It could be a niece or a nephew, or it could be a godchild or a grandchild. You know, is there someone that's going to rely on you and there's going to be trouble if you're gone early? And almost always, unless they're a single person whose parents are no longer around, they're literally the only one they know in their family, and they don't have any kids. They're almost always saying, "Oh yeah, absolutely, my son, my daughter, my nephew, my grandchild, my godson. I'm expecting to send them to college, or I'm expecting, I'm their parent, so I'm taking care of them every day. So if I wasn't there, someone else would have to." And then we go into, what are you leaving behind for them? My house. I said, do you own your home? No. I said, well, how much do you owe on your house? Oh, we just bought it a couple of years ago. So I said, you probably owe almost the whole loan, right? So your house isn't an asset. It's a liability. Then you don't own the home. So you might be able to sell it for a small profit, but it's not enough for them to live on. So we go into those little, it's those questions that people don't really think about. They think, I own my car. So, well, do you own it outright or do you have a loan? Well,
you own it with the bank.
Yeah. So that's a lot of people, there's that confusion or that disconnect that they say, I own my home. I say, you own your home when you don't have a loan on it. You're not renting. You're correct, but you don't own the home yet because you're still paying the bank for it. So that's not going to be something that's going to be there for your children to take care of or take advantage of that money from you selling your house. So we talk about those different little things, and then we start to get to the point of, maybe life insurance is a good play for you right now. Then we go over the different options, the different levels, the different medical that's involved with getting life insurance. And then they make an informed decision from there.
And it's, I mean, again, this is why you talk to professionals. It can get kind of confusing. We folks don't deal with it every day, so you start throwing terms around that geez, I'm not sure I know exactly what that means, and that's why you talk to somebody who's an expert, and that's why we're talking to Brett. So, as I said, we saw a new benefit, VA benefit, that was going to come about at the end of the year called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. And we thought it was pretty interesting because it'll be open to all veterans 80 years or younger who have a disability rating of 0 to 100%. And yeah. So, again, when you talk life insurance, you're often talking about having to have a medical exam done. But if you're on a if you have a disability rating, yeah, you're not going to do so good on the medical exam. So I know you've looked at this some. Tell us what you've been able to determine that this new VA life insurance benefit is going to be about.
Yeah, absolutely. So in my side of this, I would call this end of life planning, end of life planning policy, because it's only going to be $10,000 to $40,000. So $10,000 to $40,000 isn't going to send your kids to college, but it can, you know, it can take care of your end of life expenses. So your funeral, your burial plot, or whatever your plans are for after you pass away. So that is great. Like I said, your family's not going to, you know, survive off of this, but they're also not going to be in debt after you pass away, which is a great level of life insurance to have. It's affordable, and it's guaranteed acceptance, like you were saying. So there's no medical, there's no background. It's just, you know, you pay your premium, you're going to come in at a specific age, and that's going to be a whole life policy. So that policy is not going to get more expensive every year. It's just going to stay the same. So I think I want to say it's $11 if you were 18 years old and you had $10,000 of whole life insurance. It was $11 a month, and that's $11 a month for the rest of your life. So it's a good policy, and like I said, it's an end of life policy.
So let's talk about, you use the term whole life. For those of us who don't work in the field every day, explain what whole life is versus, say, term.
So term life insurance is going to have a set start and set end date. So if you have a 10-year term from today, you'd have from, what's today, the 17th, you know, let's say it's the 17th of July, 2022, and we're going to go 10-year term, so you're going to have 17th of July, 2032, that policy will end. And you won't retain any value from it after it expires, but you'll have the life benefit during those 10 years. And then there's also 20 and 30 and, you know, there's all different kinds of term lengths, but term life insurance essentially means it starts the day that the policy starts and it ends at a specific date in the future. Whole life insurance is going to mean, and the rates don't change for term either. So those stay the same. The monthly is always the same. It never goes up as you get older. Whole life insurance, same thing. Rates don't change over time. They stay the same as they were the day one. And whole life insurance means that it starts on the day the policy starts, and it doesn't, the end date is when you pass away. So that's your entire life is encompassed in that policy. It will never cancel, will never end unless the premiums aren't paid.
So you'd expect an Army guy to be able to talk plain English, and he does. So that's when I reached out and said, I need a veteran to talk about this who's in the insurance business, that I was directed to Brett. Brett, thanks. That explains whole life in term, and I think we all get it. Is it your experience by looking at VA life, this end-of-life kind of policy that's going to come available at the beginning of January 2023, I would expect the premiums to be fair, good, maybe even better than market rates if the government's offering it, if the VA is offering it. But I guess I want to check my assumptions. Do you have a reaction to that?
They are, for who they're offering them for, so they're for disabled individuals, people that have some type of disability through the VA, they aren't bad.
Brett, thanks for spending some time here today with Veterans Radio to talk about the upcoming new program, VA Life, that starts at the end of the year, and just about insurance that veterans and their family members ought to be thinking about in general.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Jim. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to maybe talking to you in the future.
You got it, Brett. Thank you very much. The whole interview with Brett is up on our podcast on veteransradio.net. Hit on the podcast site. We not only talked about VA life, but we also talked about veterans group life insurance, service disabled veterans life insurance, other insurances that VA has that, heck, I didn't even know about. We can't bring you these programs and these podcasts without the support of our sponsors, including our VSO sponsors. So we want to thank the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles Chapter in Ann Arbor, the VFW Graf O'Hara Post in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Erwin Presscorn Post. So we really appreciate that. Dale will be back next week. We're going to have some discussions on the PACT Act that I alluded to earlier. He's got some other interesting programming that he's working on. You can always find out what's going on Veterans Radio by going to veteransradio.net or to our Facebook page on veteransradio.net. We post new podcasts with stories every Tuesday morning, so you'll want to check those out. And some of the programs that end up here on the air are, you know, somewhat abbreviated from the longer format that we can do. I certainly went much longer on Sheets Laundry Club and talking about burn pit issues. And as I just mentioned, I went much longer with Brett Fennelly to talk about different insurance products that VA has and things that the commercial market has available and that you maybe should be thinking of. We want to encourage you to get out and do a few of the Vet Fests and other veteran-friendly events that are occurring this summer, both really all around the country. So take advantage of those. Get out and meet some of your fellow veterans. Find out what's of interest to them and get that community spirit going again. If you've got any programming ideas from those discussions, let Dale know. Let myself, Jim Fossone, know. We're always looking to spread the word and tell about issues of interest to veterans and maybe the businesses that they've got going or challenges and fights that they need some help on. So, you know, reach out. Let us know what's going on. We're glad to be of assistance in that regards. So, until next time on Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.